Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Yes, hello, it is the Red Men Podcast. I'm Paul Machin, Steve Hoare, Chris Pajak in the studio, all happy, all smiling. No one's smiling quite as vociferously as Chris is on the thumbnail.
I've said before.
Because no one could.
There isn't a joke or anything alive that could make anyone look like that happy. Like,
We'll run a competition if you're in the comments or you can tweet us this. Have a look at the thumbnail on YouTube for the podcast and work out what someone would have to see. We come up with the suggestion ourselves, but I want to know what people at home, what you're saying, what would someone have to see in order to make them do the face that Chris does?
If someone comes up with the answer that I gave, we're giving a free subscription to Red Men Plus out.
Sounds good. Yeah.
A 1-year subscription to Red Men Plus.
Yeah, if you can manage to guess what Chris said it was that made him do that face.
I want the exact terminology as well.
Yeah, okay, sad. I think we might be pretty safe there. But sad, yeah.
By all means. There are some sick people in this world.
I'll tell you what, we'll read some of, if we remember, I'm not here next week, but if you read some of the best ones out on the podcast next week, of the best suggestions.
Let's just do it this week so we don't forget.
Let's try and remember to do it at the end of the show. If you're from the live chat, I think that's probably the best. Better way to do it. Yeah, I will forget.
Yes,
yeah, there's not a chance.
Okay. Kickoff question. We're going to be talking about Mo Salah renewed his contract, of course. We're also going to have a good old laugh at Manchester United.
I love these podcasts.
They're great, aren't they? They're really good.
Maybe that's what made Chris do the face.
Yeah, yeah.
You just saw Man United's transfer business.
Cristiano Ronaldo telling them he wants to leave.
They just have to double Brentford's offer on wages for Ericsson as well.
Yep.
This show, this just... Oh, no, we can't. Don't do it now. Don't do it now. We'll save it. We'll save it. They're just so stupid. They're so thick and so badly run, and it makes me so happy. Anyway, kickoff question comes from Quadbod from our Club Legend Discord chat. And this might be the ultimate Sophie's choice of kickoff questions. Arguably the hardest, the most difficult. There is no correct answer here to this question. Given their current position / status, would you rather try to save A, Everton Football Club, B, Manchester United Football Club, or C, the Conservative Party? And how would you go about it? Jesus. There's one answer that it can't possibly be.
Yeah.
And that's...
The Tories.
The Tories.
I think I...
Are you going to play devil's advocate so that we don't get, like, don't bring politics into football shouts on in the comments?
Absolutely not. maybe say, have a good Labour candidate so that we could get them out. Maybe we'd be there, like, put them out there, Mersey. We haven't got that, so we're fucked. Politics has gone to shit, hasn't it? I probably would save Everton just because at least there's a couple of people who I am fond of who might get some happiness out of it. Because I don't really know any Man United fans in my life, really, like who I'm close to. I mean, fuck the Tories.
And certainly not that I would be, like, I would feel worse for seeing them sadder.
Yeah, but I've got family members who support Everton, and it would be nice in the city. But I say save. I don't want them to be good. I want them to be just fine. Like, 10th in the league all the time, not battling relegation.
That is saving Everton.
Yeah, true, yeah.
That's getting them back to what they normally are.
Yeah, that's true. Putting them back to their former glories of 20 years. And how would you do it? Put a rule in place, stop becoming the Manchester United graveyard. Like, Everton is the place where Man United rejects go to die.
And become captain.
And become captain of the club. Man United's the crap. So if you're taking their rejects, you must be awful. Yeah, like, don't sign Jesse Lingard. Just don't do it. Find somebody else. Like, stop, like, doing this. That's
it's a
one
bit
reason.
Like on Champ Man, where you go through the free transfers list and you look for names that you recognise. And more often than not, what do? You click on a lot of exotic sounding footballers.
Are we sorry? Are we talking about Everton or Man United here?
This is Everton.
Because Man United are doing the same, you know.
Yeah, that's how they transfer. That's their transfer policy. But Everton's is like, ooh,
Ronaldo.
He plays for Erickson. Manchester United. He plays for the Manchester United. Well, that's a mark of something, right? Like a stamp of approval. Like, it's not though, is it? It's garbage. Does the fact that your brother supports Everton impact your decision to save Everton Football Club?
No, there's two things that impact my decision to save Everton Football Club in this particular question. I don't think I've got a cat in hell's chance of doing it.
Okay.
Would you rather try to save?
Yeah.
Terminology, yeah. Wording. I could try, but they're a lost cause, so it's okay. I would get more enjoyment out of watching Manchester United try and save themselves and fail.
Or,
and I would get more enjoyment out of watching the Conservatives try and save themselves and fail.
Is there a point?
I would get a lot of enjoyment out of trying to save Everton and failing.
Well, I think this is interesting as ever. The devil's in the details with Chris Pajak's answers to podcast questions. But I like the idea of I am totally ill-equipped to do any of these.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So actually, in trying to save any of these, I could probably bring them down.
I know.
Just by my own ineptitude.
How good would that be? And how annoyed would my brother be with me for the reason? I mean, it's just perfect.
Yeah. Get loads of Liverpool, ex-Liverpool trials.
Why have you sold Bramley Moore? Why are you trying to make us play on the moon, Chris? Flaps, innit?
Yeah. Just think about those galactic cruisers. You get up there, like, you're entire dealing with that.
United, yeah. The issue with, to go back to it, like, the only way you could save Man United is to buy them off the idiots who own them. And I wouldn't be prepared to do that. So I actually think of all of those three, Everton would be the easiest to fix.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking, because the standards are relatively low. It's not like the Tories, people die because they're crap. And Man United are just, they're so far gone. Everton isn't that, you're not miles away. To get a decent manager and just stop buying half crap players, I don't think would be that difficult.
I want Everton to be better. I've said this all along, and this is not, I don't want to say this is an unpopular opinion or whatever, because, you know, vomit in your mouth. But I don't mind them in the same way. And I'm sure if there's areas of the city where if I lived in, I'm sure it would bother me more. But generally speaking, it doesn't, because they're so browbeaten that it doesn't really make a big deal. But having read Tony Evans's book, Two Tribes, and it talks about like Liverpool, Everton, Everton's peak, 80s peak, alongside us in the battle and what that was like. And obviously the death of the idea of like a United Merseyside and all that kind of stuff. And I don't want us to all be best mates. You know what I mean? I don't want us to all go, you know, hand in hand, skipping down the road to the matches and all that. I like a little bit of venom in it, but I would rather them be, and for the good of the city, because like it's like the post-Heisel thing. Whether it's right or not that it's Liverpool's fault that Everton's greatest ever team never got to reach the peaks that it should have done, etc., is kind of irrelevant. Loads of their fans believe it. I want them to get back to a level where they can put that to bed, where they can put to rest all those demons that have like where it's Liverpool's fault that we're fucked. They just need to get back to enjoying football. Look at them last season. They actually got over all their cop-out behaviour issues and all their issues with us and actually started supporting and loving the football team again. If they could actually have a little get, I want to see them get back. I don't quite know what you do with it, but I mean, for a start, probably put some sort of plan in place. Now, I don't need to define the plan, starting with a plan, just a plan, a coherent top-to-bottom plan. This is who Everton Football Club are. Try and find a manager who plays a style of football that they like and that they enjoy, and then buy players that fit that style of football, and then go from there is probably not a bad place to start. But I've got I don't have a deep-seated hatred to Everton that I do for Man United, and certainly in a jokey way with Man United because it's football ultimately. But I loathe the Conservative Party, and I mean, it's why do they need saving? They're in power, they can get away with fucking literal murder.
Depends what you mean by save, because they're sound.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of moderate Conservatives who are, you know, and there are, who aren't knobheads, who aren't the extreme ends of things, who probably feel like they've lost their party the same way that we would feel about the Labour Party, because that's fucked as well. Anyway.
That might have been a better question.
Heavy as fuck. Thanks, God, bud. Friendly kickoff questions.
You know what? On the Conservative Party, I've been saying this for a couple of years now. The greatest trick they ever pulled was convincing people on 25 grand that they're middle class.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, and it's their party. It's not. It's a 1% party, yeah. And that's what it's about.
I like our Kumar's response. He says, "That's like asking who you want to screw your wife, your brother, your father, or your son." Like, there's no right answer really.
Yeah,
of that though, Chris, who would you know? That might have been a better kickoff question.
Who broke one of the European Cups when did that happen?
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Did that ever answer my question?
No idea.
No one's owning up to it.
For those who are listening, we've got mini European Cups and the handles have fell off one. That feels like a bad omen, really.
Yeah.
It feels like we should fix that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not happy with that.
Maybe we should buy two to replace it and hope.
Keep one at the... Yeah, I'm not sure about that. It doesn't open either. Right, we've been nominated as Best Fan YouTube Channel 2022 in the World Soccer Talk Awards. I'm going to read verbatim from Ross's tweet, which I think he will have had passed on to him as a message from Charlie, because he told me about this award last night. And he said, "I've been told in no uncertain terms, not only I will be sacked, I will in fact be dead if we don't win. So if you could go ahead and vote and share, I'd kind of appreciate it." That comes from Ross. He probably should have put his name to that, really, shouldn't he? But yeah, worldsoccertalk.com. We'll put the tweet, we'll put the link in the descriptions and all that kind of stuff underneath. Go and vote for us.
It's been a while since we've done this.
Won an award.
Yeah, well, even bothered to try and win one.
Yeah. That Ross doesn't feel that way. I feel like I have this conversation with him at least twice a year over the Northwest Football Awards.
Yeah, oh yeah,
football, them. Whatever they're called.
I didn't work here then, so I don't care.
Yeah.
I think I was barely here.
Yeah. You weren't working because all your old bosses come and sat next to me and told me what a wonderful man you are.
Did you pay them?
Not as much as they paid me.
In hard work. Paid them in hard work, didn't you? Yeah. But yeah, we're at World Soccer Talk. I'm running awards. We'd like to win.
It's in America. Do you think we get to go to America if we win?
Sure, why not? We'll do it. You know what, if we win, let's do it. I don't know. I've not really looked into it. I just like winning awards, to be honest, and it's been a while. So let's win another award.
That felt very much like a promise that you're not going to deliver on if we do win.
I've delivered on Madden things.
Would you? Okay, it might be you get to go to America.
Well, if we can tie it in, me and Chris are already going to Vegas, so
it's true. And we're going to Germany as well, Steve.
You are, yeah.
We'll see. Right.
I'm like the Vladimir. Stay behind and water the plants while we go gallivanting around.
More details on this to follow. It's not been organised, but we were asked by the Berlin Reds to do a live show over in, I think it's Berlin, right? Which makes sense for the name.
The Berlin Reds, what are you going to fucking tussle off?
But Steve was the one having the conversation with Andrew about it. And great thing, we'd like you over. And we would like you over.
Can you make sure it's Paul and Chris? I mean, you're allowed to, but it needs to be Paul and Chris. Nobody's coming to see you, you bald idiot, is why I might as well paraphrase it. Like, we want Paul and Chris. But if you want to come, it's fine.
Yeah.
I was very much the afterthought. Yeah.
Right, Sal, we're going to talk to Salah in a second. Before we do as well, one more piece of business before we crack in. It's time to draw this month's Club Legend prize. Chris, would you care to model the prize that is about to be drawn?
We're 5 days into July.
Because the podcast was the end of the month last month, wasn't it? Jesus. YouTube viewers will be able to get this a little bit clearer. But yeah, we are giving away right now this Liverpool goalkeeper shirt from last season, signed by the entire goalkeeper squad: Alisson, Taffarel, John Achterberg, Cuiven Kelleher, et al. Let's move all the breakable, spillable things away from Chris there. Right, and it's time to do that draw right now. If you're a Club Legend subscriber of a Redman Plus, your name today is in the hat for this. Let's... you are?
Oh, no.
The laptop's gone. It's right in front of me. Hey! Oh, humour. Was it ever there, Joe?
It was until you started
doing
the wheel. Oh, no.
We'll be back. Give us a shout. Hey, it's back. Right, let's start to click the wheel. Let's have a drum roll, please. Clock 17.
I thought that was a swear word.
I genuinely had to read that before I said it out loud. Croc 17 is the winner of that signed Liverpool goalkeeper squad. The unique prize that is. Congratulations. Ross will be in touch to get that sorted for you. Before we move on, here is next month's prize.
Here we go again.
Well done, Chris. Oh, he's got a tech. You could be a signed flipper, I think. you know, like in America on the street corner. Yeah. I reckon you'd be an expert sign
flipper.
I'd like
to wear one, to be honest, like the A-board.
Yeah, okay, we can do that. We can work that too. That's our new, that's one of our new marketing campaigns.
Chris, I'm sorry, that's outside Anfield.
And a banana on my head. There's no reason.
Yeah. Just spin it ever so slightly, would you, Chris? I'll rotate it to get the lights off it. Yes, it is a signed retro Liverpool 2001 UEFA Cup final Dortmund shirt, the red one, signed by Emil Heskey and by Jamie Carragher as well. So if you want to be in with a chance of winning that incredible prize, get that on your wall in your Marrow Woman cave. You right there, mate?
No, my arms are really sore.
But all you've got to do is go to redmenplus.com, join our Liverpool streaming service at Club Legends here, and you're entered into that prize draw.
Did you say woman cave?
Yeah.
That makes me think like vaginas.
Oh, right, sounds okay. That would do. Brilliant.
Never going to ever hear that.
Maybe that's what Chris was looking at.
We were looking at bathrooms, and we're redoing our bathroom and stuff the other day. We did that. We were looking at these like wall panels and stuff like that, and there was a white one with this black sort of shape around it. And I'm looking at it with my wife, and all I'm thinking is giant fanny. And she goes, "That's a vagina, isn't it?" I was like, "Yes, yes, it is."
Did you buy it?
No.
It's in the shed. I just nip out there when the kids are gone to bed and just sit there and look at it. Right, sounds, yes. Yeah, get involved. Redmen Plus, you know, it's the extra shows that we do here. More podcasts. In fact, after this podcast, we're going to be doing the draft again. And what's the topic this week?
Players signed from other Premier League clubs.
Tough, you know.
So anyone we've signed since 1992 from a fellow Premier League side, it's not easy.
Yeah, we've got
the list of names is not.
It makes me think Liverpool should never sign players pretty much from the Premier League. The amount of misses.
Of the 22, there's going to be like five or six where you think, how are they even in
consideration? Yeah. Brilliant. Actually, look forward to that. I'll be streaming.
It's going to be good, this one. It's going to be really good. This one's hard.
It's going to be streaming later this week on Redmen Plus, so get involved with that. Right.
Left, up, down, centre, I went.
I did the ABZI went to Charlie the day, and she had no idea what I was doing. I was like, "We've been together for 15 years, and how have I not explained that someone's got to win everything at all times?" Because back to me and Chris's childhood, where somebody had to be the winner in every given situation. So if you say A,
B, Z, I win.
Rather than go A, B, C, D, E, it was just get to Z, and you win. Fucking losers, aren't we? Salah.
So he went right, and I went
left, up, down.
Centre, I went.
He's a fucking pathetic, isn't it?
Fucking grow up.
Steve was getting blowies in fucking in parks while we were inventing ways to like
win.
Was I?
Yeah. Crocky Park, was it in the bushes?
No, I didn't live in Croxteth.
Okay.
Let's swiftly move on.
Are you sure?
This off camera the other day.
Clearly wants the podcast to move on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Speaking of winners, Mohamed
15-year-old Steve was a winner.
Signed a new deal that will keep him at the club until 2025. Or more realistically, in 2 years' time, we're going to be right back here again, stressing about his contract situation. But we don't have to worry about that for another couple of years. Chris, I've not spoken to you about this yet. It's It's a very un-FSG-like move, or rather, should I say, it's a very un-FSG, as we understand them, kind of move, because we've only ever seen them get rid of lads on the top wages. We've never seen us own the best players in the world that you need to all of a sudden stretch your wage structure and you need to fight off interest and successfully fight off interest from clubs who could pay them more money.
Yeah, but he's literally one of the best players in the world, so I think you do change exactly what you want, don't you? I think the other thing is you want the best years, and I think what this tells me is that Liverpool don't believe that Salah's best years are behind him yet, and that's the most important part of it. Liverpool believe that there's still value to be had in a couple of years from Mo Salah, and that the best thing for the team and the finances of the club is capitalise on both. Yep. Have your cake and eat it type of thing, and that's get the best years of Mo Salah, and probably maybe look to sell in a couple of years' time where you can sell him for 100 plus million and then you reinvest that into your side if that is what they decide to
also,
do.
Also, you say like on FSG, but FSG have evolved with the times anyway, so they broke the world record for a defender, they bought the most expensive goalie in the world. Think you change, like you guys run a business, you know how you act now is different than how you acted 12 years ago when you first started this. Like,
yeah, as a business, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, not again. Not as people. Back to the previous conversation, you're still losers. Yeah. But you run the business differently. Yeah, like, yeah, we literally hired two members of staff the other day. Like, that was unthinkable 12 years ago for you two, wasn't it? Yeah. The kind of thing. So, FSG have evolved. They've walked into a bit of a shit show, fixed it. But when you fix something, you can either stay the same or you can continue to grow. And they've grown and grown. And they've hired the best manager in the world. They put everything in place: new training ground, new stands. Blah blah.
It is very much like Redmen, isn't it?
It's very similar. Who's the best manager? Is that me? Get in. And then blowjobs and compliments. What are you after?
Blowjobs and compliments.
I can deliver on at least one of those.
It's like basically buying you're getting two tickets to a concert and you buy them a ticket and they buy you a ticket there, isn't it? Like, you mean, yeah, we're both going together. Yeah.
Oh, I'm in. Let's go. Anyway, back to me.
Actually, not second.
That's the best.
Carry on.
I've honed my technique by then. Right, let's carry on. Yeah, so they it is an FSG move, but like Liverpool have been this good, and they've never had the best player in the world. So we don't know like this is an FSG move because it's not. It's the first time they've had the best player on the planet who needs the new contract. They'll be back in this situation when Virgil's contract is due, and they might be back again with all. You know, they've got tons of these. Trent Alexander-Arnold will need a new contract at some point, and he's going to be the best right back on the planet. And Alisson might need a new contract at some point, and he's the best goalie in the world. So this is the start of it. What they have done, they've set a benchmark now, where everyone knows that Liverpool are willing to pay £350,000 a week to somebody. Mm-hmm. So now they've got to deal with that. That is the new benchmark now. Everyone's going to want closer. When Virgil wants more money, he might want to touch that number. Trent might want that number. Alisson might want a new signing. Jude Bellingham, if they sign him, might want something similar. So Liverpool, they've made the rod for their own back, and they'll be very much aware of it. And like Chris has said, that's how much faith they've got in Mohamed Salah. They're willing to just, almost double the wage of what someone's on. He's on like probably like at least £100,000 more, maybe, than what like our best players are all on at the moment. So they must think he's worth it. And the underlying numbers, the just eye test shows you if you're going to spend it and you're going to break the mold, break it for someone who's Mohamed
Salah. They're also not going to be doing this stupidly. This is not like, we'll come on to it because it's fascinating, the dichotomy between what we're talking about with Liverpool and what we'll come on to talk about with Manchester United is stark.
Is he still on less than their goalie?
Okay. Or at least the same. He's probably on about the same as what the way is he even.
I thought it was 380 for De Gea.
Yeah, you might be right. You know, but either way, he's in the ballpark figure,
and he's not even Spain's goalie.
David De Gea. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's the best player in the world, and he's not even the best. There's a chance he wasn't even the best goalie at Man United. You know, a year ago. What we know we're doing is that we talked about this before. People
they sorted that themselves, though, didn't the United? They got rid of the other one.
it's like, what are Liverpool doing, spending big money? Because that's always like, well, where's your moral high ground? It's like, well, again, no one's saying that Liverpool, no one's ever tried to truly intimate, and you can read between the lines and get whatever you want, fit it to suit what you want. Liverpool never claimed to be paupers, but Liverpool have organically grown themselves to the point where they can afford to spend it, though, and they won't be doing this if they can't afford it. This is not a Hail Mary. This is not like we and Liverpool have done that in the past where it's like, oh shit, we've got to throw money at this problem, otherwise we're fucked. There would have been a point at which Liverpool let Salah go.
Yeah.
And if they couldn't have got it down to within something they were comfortable with, they'd have let him go. And that, for better or for worse, but there was a threshold, and they've managed to either... They've managed to raise the threshold a bit, and they've managed to bring Salah down enough where Liverpool, because again, they just wouldn't have signed it off.
No,
because that's not how they operate. No,
and do you know what this whole thing comes back to, and the Jude Bellingham stuff and the Nunes and everything comes back to, for me, for Klopp signing for extra years. That I don't think happens without Klopp signing for extra years. I don't think, you know, Jude Bellingham thinks about it, if that's what is being rumoured at the moment. Salah probably doesn't agree to less money than he perhaps could have got on the open market. I say perhaps, definitely could have got on the open market. So this is all joined up thinking. This is the thing that I laugh at Manchester United and Everton about, because they don't have it. Liverpool have got a plan in place, you're absolutely right. They've done the finances, of course. They've done the finances. They're prudent. Prudent doesn't mean stingy or skint. Prudent means you're good with your money and you work it out at exactly what you're going to get. They've come through the COVID times. They realise that they managed it pretty well throughout that. And they now know where their money is going to be for the next couple of years and stuff like that. And they're willing to spend that money. There's nothing wrong with that. They've earned the right to spend that money.
I also think there's a flip side of, we mentioned they wouldn't have signed for Jürgen. There's a chance Jürgen couldn't be arsed with another rebuild. When he sat down with the owners, there must have been a conversation. Listen, is there any chance, like, you know, Mo Salah's going to stay, isn't he? Like, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm going to be able to invest in my squad.
And they'll have said to him, look, you need to do
what we'll do what we can.
Yeah, exactly. But there's, you know,
we can't have them all.
You can't have them all. But the flip side is, we're not expecting to just sign Mo Salah to $200,000 a week or play it off, because if we do, like, Jürgen will have had to, you know, agree to stuff. I'm guessing, because I can't imagine him now at this stage of his career could be arsed rebuilding again. He's doing the evolution kind of thing, but it isn't blowing up to start again. Where if you say nobody is ever earning £250,000 a week, Steve.
Chris is Googling something. That was like...
You made that inconspicuous.
I am an aggressive typer, okay?
In 90s movies.
So, go back to my point.
I learned on a typewriter, okay? I'm old enough to remember our family typewriter. Sounds, get over it.
If FSG had said to Jürgen, we're not willing to pay anyone £250,000 a week, he probably thinks, you know what, not for me, because I'm never going to be able to compete with Manchester City. So there's probably been compromises made, and that's the thing, is that I don't think Jürgen ever really wanted to have to spend £80 million on a £75 million on a goalie and a midfielder.
There's a difference between us and Tottenham, and the difference between us and Tottenham is that we grow the finances and grow the budget with it.
Yeah,
and Tottenham don't. Tottenham and they'll have to do, and they're doing a little bit of that now because they've got Conte. They've finally got a manager who's like, hey, this is how you win.
Hey,
yeah,
hey, and so they might have to adapt that. But that's the thing about it, is that, and this is why Dortmund will never topple Bayern Munich, because they're fixed in the hierarchy. Liverpool are managing to find a way to still compete, and there will probably come a limit at some point. You know, there'll come a point where there's just the money that you can legitimately, without having to fudge the numbers in a really, really bad way, which obviously some football clubs do, and I don't think Liverpool do anywhere near to that level. They may do some. They'll have clever accounting, of course they will, because all big businesses do.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's no way that they're not to those levels. There will come a limit to it all. We're not there today.
And as the revenue streams continue to grow, then it's easy. The point will be, every business will hit a point where the revenues, you can't really get much more. There's only so much money you can make.
Yeah.
But Liverpool are miles away from that. Yeah. Like, so there's plenty of room for them. Like, they're amazing at the commercial stuff, and they're brilliant at everything.
Yeah.
They are really, really good.
This is not Leeds United.
Yeah, they're spending money they earn, and then they'll grow the business. And then having Mo Salah helps you grow more money that pays for Mo Salah.
Yeah.
There's a value to having.
Well, we said this on the summer transfer show yesterday, which we did a good old in-depth dive onto all the transfer stuff, including Salah. But the point I made on that is, why is Salah there with his shirt? Because that Salah 11 shirt is worth so much money to Liverpool now because of the Nike deal. He doesn't need to be there. He just needs to be in a training shirt and sign the contract like everyone else. Or he's got the front of the shirt. But the fact that it's all Salah's wearing the shirt, Salah with the 11 holding it up and all that, because if you love Mo Salah now, there you go. There's a big old reminder.
Yeah,
the iconic Salah shirt.
There's been a lot of people hanging fire to see what happened this summer.
Like, yeah, waiting for Harvey Elliott's new number and that.
Right, but more so, like, make sure Mo Salah's not getting sold.
Yeah, no, he was joking.
No, but in terms of, like, as well, Not like I was thinking.
Just to clarify, everyone, that was a hilarious joke from Chris.
I thought so too.
That was really good.
That was what I would have done. If I'd have got it, I'd done the face off the thumbnail. Maybe it was that joke that you told.
Yeah.
I think there's also a conversation to be had around like FSC are learning. But they've learned from, they're successful in other sports, but football's mad. Football's nuts. And I don't think, when they walked in, they might have had the grand plan of, you know what, we have a £200,000 a week wage limit and we never ever break it. And then they see what other teams are doing and they've gone, ah, shit, well, we're not going to win. We're not going to moneyball this to an extent where we can topple Manchester City without having to put our hands in our pockets. Yeah. So,
but FSG, this is the thing, what I think people's understanding of Liverpool's ownership structure is just weird, and I don't think people care to delve into it enough. And you can't. We shouldn't have to care. And ultimately, while Liverpool are good on the pitch, it doesn't matter. It doesn't give a fuck who owns it. And that's why Man United never managed to turn their owners out. It's because they'll just distract them with signings and all that kind of stuff. Like, but they've
got to get in gold scarves. Oh, quick, San Ronaldo.
But they FSG have got a portfolio. And the value for them is they don't take money out of Liverpool in the way that like the Glazers take money out of Liverpool. It's not like their thing and that's going to line their pockets. That's going to pay for their holidays in the year to come. Their value comes in having Liverpool be as valuable as possible because it raises the total value of their portfolio and that allows them to bring in more investment. And that's where the value is in Fenway Sports Group, it is in, what is it, Redbird or whatever. It's that bigger thing, and that's why they add franchises, and that's why, you know, they did that, and we couldn't really see that at the time because, of course, individual fan bases are so focused on the success of their football club. So it was like Red Sox fans were concerned that they were stealing money out of their pockets to fund Liverpool and vice versa, and now they've gone and bought like the Penguins or whatever, and they've got the NASCAR team.
They're looking for value everywhere, and there's going to come a point where they can't probably add more value to Liverpool, and that's the point when they sell. They're going to walk away with £4 billion, give or take. Was it 270, 275 they bought us for? Chelsea's just gone for three on a really sort of this has to get done deadline.
Fire sale,
yeah, exactly. So when Liverpool owners sell, it's going to be £4 billion they're walking away with. That's where their money comes from.
Yeah.
It's in their best interest to keep Liverpool doing well, as shit as that sounds, because they're going to walk away with an extra £1 billion if they continue to do that. Yeah. There's going to come a point where they're going to struggle to find that value. But what they're doing right now, I've got the contract stuff in front of me, is absolutely superb. We mentioned this when Virgil van Dijk and everyone signed their contracts, they've left Salah till last. Duh. You put Salah first on the contract renewal and everybody goes, well, I want close to that figure. They didn't do it that way. Mm-hmm. They sorted everybody else out, and they've now got Bobby Firmino with a year left, 30 years old. Right, you've got Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, 28 years old with a year left. Naby Keita, 27 years old with a year left. Nat Phillips, Adrian Milner, Ojo, Reece Williams all on a year left. Thiago Gomez and Matip on 2024 deals, as this website says it. So these aren't first team players for the most part. Naby Keita's one of those where you're wondering, how's it going to go? To be honest with you. But everybody else there, if you told me that they're all going to leave at some point, you're not thinking, oh, they need to wrap that up.
Naby's the last lad you could reasonably expect to start the first game of the season.
And that's that, isn't it? You know what I mean? So when you look at the length of contract of teams left, 2025 is a big year, or 2024 in terms of renewals, maybe earlier, maybe next season, something like that, because you've got your Trents, you've got your Virgil van Dijk and stuff like that. But they've bought themselves a year there right now where they can sort that out. They're going to have a look at Konate and you know, he's going to obviously at some point probably going to get a new contract because that's the way they've done it. They've tied them down before the end of the contract to keep that money figure low. They haven't let most of the lads, when they've come into the club, they've done Virgil van Dijk again before his contract ever gets any.
Mo Salah was done after a year.
Trent Alexander-Arnold, Mo Salah. The ones that they realise, shit, we're going to need to pay him $350,000 a year. They sorted that out 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, let's not wait. Let's pay him more now while we can afford it over the term
and
of his contract.
And add more time on. If they hadn't done the Salah one early, he'd have been out of contract now.
Yeah,
they got him done after a year.
And he would have been on.
And Virgil, particularly the timing of his contract, you know, coming back,
all the goodwill that you've got. They did the same with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. You also, if you tie up Mo Salah at the middle of last season, he's probably on more money than at the end, to be quite honest with you. It's all about timing.
Yeah.
Joe Gomez, I think they did the same, didn't he, when he was injured as Oxlade-Chamberlain?
Ox got another year because he basically said, you know, we've robbed you a year, there's another year. Do you know what they're doing? They're not talking, like, I get there's some frustration with them at times, and most of it to me, the transfer stuff doesn't bother me really. A lot of it to do is some of the other shitty decisions they've made, but they have, at least they've listened and backtracked on some of them, or a lot of them. But I think anyone who questions Liverpool's transfer policy is bananas, really.
Yeah.
I would like Liverpool to sign a midfielder. The hysterical nature of, well, we're knackered if we don't sign a midfielder, like we're going to be fucked and we'll never win anything, is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense.
And in so much as well, it was one of the things that came up in the chat with Cyber Undish on Expert Insight. We're going to have a big old chunk of that coming up shortly. But he talked about, like, it's the other clubs. We chatted a bit about them last week, but, like, I think he said, I might be inaccurate on this, but, like, no club makes more than, like, an 8-point leap season on season.
Really?
More or less. And there's obvious exceptions. Liverpool, season before last to last season, because that was us bouncing back to our level. But, like, that's the thing. If nothing else, Liverpool are, unless something catastrophic happens to Liverpool, they're still going to be in a fight with Manchester City for the top places. They've still not got pressure from underneath. Is the kind of point on that? And you're right. They're just sound. They're set. They're very well run. There's lots of other things happening, and we get to talk. We're allowed to talk about things like the training centre. Well, you know, Liverpool, all the little marginal gains have all added up in a massive way last season, because they just bit the bullet and jumped into the training centre. They had to delay it because of COVID, and they went, fuck it, we just need to get in there. And it was mentioned to me as well that there will have been, like, soft tissue injuries because they had to bed the pitches in, and they hadn't done that properly because they just jumped in the middle of a season. They've taken the hit, but now you've got, like, the health and fitness, all the nutrition, everything about Liverpool.
It's
world
class.
Just, yeah,
it's exactly. World class. And you know, let's not forget the fact that they will have done two sides of the stadium as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big undertaking, isn't it? You know, Anfield Road hopefully open for the start of this season, of course.
Next season.
Main stand already open. But what I love about it is players want to go to Kirby. Players want to, because we think of them playing at Liverpool as Anfield. 4 days a week, they're at Kirby. Yeah. It's the facilities.
That's where they live.
That's the bread and butter of it, isn't it? And if you've got somewhere where you want to go to with the absolute best equipment, you're already ahead of the pack.
Well, it's funny because you think about it from our perspective. It's like saying that Anfield is where we work, or the away grounds is where we work, and it's like, it genuinely isn't. That's somewhere you go to do a one element of your job, and I know it's the most important, and that's the one that gets the biggest numbers and all that kind of stuff. But, like, this is where you work. This is where your day to day is done. And I've been inside that place a couple of times now, and been able increasingly to have a little bit of a nose around.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. It is just it's so good. It's such a great place to be. It's so well thought out. The social areas and the food and the training and the facilities for the people who want to be incredible athletes. You've got a place that's set up for that. And Melbourne's lovely. But it's so quaint. By comparison, it's like, it's very historic, and it's lovely. It's got a real sense of place when you go there, but it is like, it's like going to a school to train. You know what I mean? It's like going to a school gym compared to going, as you said, a world class training centre.
Also, like, there's very little Liverpool could do to just blow Manchester City out the water. Anyway, you know what I mean? Like, there's a very few things Liverpool could really do that makes them. Well, we're nailed on to win the league now. That's hard. And it's the same for Manchester City. They've signed probably the best striker in the world, or one of them. And I don't think anyone thinks, well, they're winning the league by 20 points. You mean Liverpool are going to be on their coattails still? Yeah. I think that's the difficulty. The best, and that's going to be hard to wrap your head around times. Like, the best we can do is just be in the shout. There's nothing really I don't think we can do that just goes, right, you are nailed on going to win the league now.
No.
With Manchester United, they signed Robin Van Persie and won the league. Well, they've just signed him off him, and they're going to win the league
and
now.
It's the proof of that is Chelsea signed Romelu Lukaku, and everyone thought it was the same thing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, because now you need to be perfect in all aspects of football. Your ownership, your infrastructure, the support, again, the health, fitness, the nutrition, all of those things. And then what it boils down to is the tactics and the fellas on the pitch who go and do
and
the business.
And we just signed the best one up. And I think it's also worth mentioning, and I know you mentioned, I don't want to repeat too much, but, like, God, touch wood really when I say this, but, like, he's a freak athlete. He plays all the time.
Yeah.
If you're going to give your money to someone, give it to one who can play 3 games a week, will, you know, run his arse off, he'll do the press, he'll score goals, he'll make assists. He's everything. Like, he's the machine. I talk about Virgil van Dijk was made in a lab to be a centre-half, like, you couldn't get better. Mohamed Salah's pretty much that, as a wide forward. Like, he's got everything. That's who you pay. Liverpool have fell down the past. We're like highest earners. We're lads who couldn't get on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Daniel Sturridge ran a decent wage. Adam Lallana was on good money, and they were always injured.
Yeah, we're giving lads the wages that like they
they should
deserve for who they are and their status. And we're still doing that because still the best players deserve the best wages. But it's now, it's backed by so much data.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, which is actually quite an interesting and nicely timed segue into what we're doing next. We have got a wonderful, wonderful show with Simon Brundish on Redmen Plus, where he talks about like the conditioning, the health and fitness, and the sports science behind Liverpool squads and how what the players and the riggers they have to go through, and some deep dives into how players performed and how they changed last season and what's going to be required in the coming season and the next challenges of the World Cup year. We've got a big old segment of that coming up. Then we will return. We'll be doing some of the comments and super chats that have come through. We're going to have a good old laugh at Manchester United's expense. So check this out now. Speaking of that, I guess it kind of leads us into what's to come this season, really. And I wouldn't expect you to have an answer in a season that's just been invented by FIFA. Let's play a World Cup in November and December, Simon. Let's play an entire half of a season in less time than ever before. Let's get all the Champions League games done before mid-November. First and foremost, it's insane, isn't it? But what does that... But what does that look like, you know, now? You know, how does that change the approach in pre-season? And just to speculate, from the only way I'd look at it is, do you set the lads up as though it's a straight burn till November, and then maybe you do another pre-season in that period, or is it because some lads are just going to be playing World Cup games as well.
Yeah, I don't think we're quite fortunate. We don't have a lot of World Cup players, and so I'm guessing that this might play into Klopp's hands, undoing the stuff that we talked about earlier about him coming here and not having a winter break, because now he's got a winter break.
Yeah.
So he actually, him and Corney, they know how to prepare for a double, a two-pronged season. But they've never played. Nobody has ever played the volume of games before Christmas that we've got this time. So on top of the World Cup, we've got international breaks. Yeah. Absolute madness.
Yeah.
And so if we look quickly while I ramble, we look at the how a game week looks, right? So you have match day plus one, match day plus two, match day plus three. And plus one is an active recovery day. Plus two is usually a totally recovered day, a passive recovery day, where you just stretch. You basically do very, very little. You might have some kind of walkthrough, breakdown of game footage. Game day plus three is where you start to do actual training.
Yeah.
Because on the fourth day after a game is actually when a human is recovered. So on all of the testing of footballers over the years, the central nervous system is fully recovered on the fourth day after a game, right? We don't get that very often. So I call that full rest day. And between the 27th of August and the 11th of December, which is 77 days, there's not one single game day plus four. There's not one single fully recovered day when football clubs actively train in the way that you expect football teams to train. If you showed up at a training ground and you see lads like competing and sprinting and maybe even 11 on 11, that only happens on game day plus four. Never happens on game day plus three.
Yeah.
Right? That doesn't occur once in 77 days between from the fourth game of the season and the World Cup. It doesn't happen at all. So it's just game, 2 days, game, 2 days, game, 2 days, game, internationals. So it's madness. So what we have to do now is embed all of the tactical approaches for the season. So we always have some, there's always a nuanced change in how we're going to create for the season. That's going to be done now because there is no moment in the season where we can start to do that until after Christmas, which is really weird because we've got a whole ton of extra days. It's like they wedged everything in before the World Cup and then afterwards they went, fuck it. Like, this just... Yeah. It's surreal how few games there are after Christmas.
Yeah,
Like this year when we got through all of the cups, there was like, oh, we're never going to fit any. There's no days to fit games in. There they go. No, pick a week. It's easy. Yeah. It's so weird why they've set it up this way. It's for your Champions League, I think. So anyway, what the consequence of this is, there is going to be lots of proactive rotation. My feeling is that he's gonna have 18 players that get fully rotated. In the first half of the season, you're going to get Robbo, Trent, Virgil, Mo. They're going to be playing 2,500 minutes-ish. They're going to be used quite a lot, quite intensively, because they're not at the World Cup. And apart from Trent, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
If he's going to play.
Yeah.
But you're going to offset that with probably 800 minutes-ish from their understudies that wouldn't usually play. They would only get Caribou games. And there's one Caribou game before Christmas. Right, the last game before they leave for the World Cup. That's when the first Caribou game we get to play. So sign me up. But it's all just real games. So I hate that goddamn competition. And I have no interest in the domestic cups at all. But this year we can actually use them as preseason and topping up. So you remember when I said about the understudies, mm-hmm. Not being fresh, not being primed to for game time. So if we're using those players, I'm fine. As long as our first team don't get any bloody Caribou Cup games, sign me up for that. Just play our reserves. We've got a significant reserve squad. Play those lads in all the cups. If they win, amazing. But then don't start drip feeding our Virgil shouldn't be playing in the second round, any round of the Caribou Cup. Yeah. But when we start getting drawn against big teams in the third round before the quarter final, Klopp last season started dripping in the big players. Ali played, Virgil, Trent, Robbo. I think Konate played 59% of the season. Jota played 58% of all minutes in the cup. Trent played 55. Robbo played 55. So at the end of the season, they wasted so many. Wasted. We won those cups, so it's exciting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Let's just to qualify.
What is it cost?
Yeah.
Yeah. How tired were they at the end of the season?
Yeah.
Because they did that, and we've got actual understudies for every position on the pitch now. So as long as we're smart, we can mitigate their load and they could be fresh.
If you were coming into the season then, because obviously that's very much looming on the horizon, it's going to be part and parcel of the preparation. The team will be back in on this week coming, pre-season will begin, jetting around the world again, which is obviously a thing. But because I think Liverpool need to hit the ground running this season. They need to hit the ground running every season when you're playing against Manchester City for a title. How much do you think... How will Klopp handle that? Because you've got Nunes is there. He's a £65 million centre forward. There's obviously other considerations in terms of what he's going to do. The title winning season, we saw a little bit less rotation because he just wanted to go. He just wanted to trust that the lads he could put out there. How do you think he'll balance that? Because, yeah, you can't afford to over integrate or make too many sweeping tactical changes, because he'll want to just pick up where the team left off, albeit fresher.
Yeah, I also don't want people to forget that Diaz, as exciting as he was, he did the things that the eye test shows. You can see him, right? He runs incessantly, but the way we created change when Diaz was in the team. Like, Mo got lots of criticism relatively, but his role changed because of how Diaz and then Mane were in the team, mm-hmm. right? Off the ball, the way we press changed when Diaz is in the team. So he isn't the perfect cog in the system yet. He will still take time. So Darwin will absolutely take time. I don't know whether my feeling is it's unlikely that Klopp will go, right, play exactly the same way as you would everybody else. I think they'll try to mitigate the things that he does instead until he's caught up to speed. I think we're probably underestimating Bobby's role in next season.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. And Bobby's brilliant. He is a lot less brilliant than he used to be. Players get old. That happens. But he allows the team to function in a really comfortable way they all know. And I think there is significant value in that. I think if If we can try this new evolved way, worst case, we stick Bobby in and everybody just settles back down again into the role that they absolutely autonomously know and they don't have to think about for half an hour a game or whatever. And it works. And it might not solve the tactical problem going on in that game, but it very much well might. And we're probably going to be more secure with Bobby in there and allows the other players to do those things. So I think he would have to be blown away by Darwin in pre-season for him to be starting the season. Klopp doesn't get... He's not enamoured with shiny new toys.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, if you want to check out the full expert insight with Simon Brundish, a bit different from the tone and vibe of the podcast, but we did have a laugh as well while we were doing it. So if you want to grow your knowledge of a particular field, that's what the expert insight shows.
It was a great excerpt of the expert insight.
Brilliant. Really good. Really good. Well done. The full thing's on Redman Plus in video and in podcast form. So
don't miss a spell that.
Go, you can do. What?
You be you, mate. You're the
excerpt of the insert.
What? Excerpt. Insert of an excerpt of the expert insight.
Can you spell it? Excerpt.
Can you say it three times fast?
No.
Sad. We had some super chats come in while we were on the break for that. Stevie G, who's been a member for 6 months here on YouTube, says, "Welcome, we're Steve. Going to win the league." I
think so too.
I think so too. I genuinely do. I've just got
shock. Paul and Chris predicting Fulham to win the league for the 12th year on the bounce.
Without a doubt. And John Lee David Blackshaw with £10 super chat. What a wonderful guy he is as well. To vote now. Don't do that. You guys and girls are amazing. Redmen TV are the greatest. Have a beer on me, my friends. I have made lifelong friends with the legends, YNWA. Yeah, a wonderful mention there because, John Lee David Blackshaw is one of our Club Legend subscribers. He's in the Discord and he came to our live shows as well. Really, really brilliant fella. And you can get involved with our wonderful community over there by joining. And we have got another super chat, which I will find momentarily. Gareth Baird has been a member for 21 months. Just says, "I'm so excited for this season. Come on, you Reds." Yeah, me too. I'm getting more and more. I'm really wavering because I'm like, part of me's going, like, this time next week, we're playing our first preseason game, and that's fucking insane. But at the same time, I keep having like, oh, I'm quite looking forward to seeing who's going. I'm like, who's in the training picks? Who's back? And like, it looks like everyone's going to be back by the time the tour starts as well, pretty much. How many will play in the game, I don't know, but there's a chance that like we'll have a good team for that Man United game, which is pretty cool. So I just can't wait to see the hysteria around like Salah. And like I remember doing the Henderson book and going through Propaganda's old photos of the last time we did that tour and seeing like the hysteria for Hendo because he was the captain and all that kind of stuff. Like, just, boss, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and we all should be. But it is a bit too soon for the footy to be coming back, to be fair.
Flying out to Far East, are we?
Yeah, can't wait.
Just you, innit?
Yeah.
Yeah, not me again.
I'll
be here. Watering the plants.
Around to himself. Did you see that? Then Joe rooted the fucker out of here.
Brilliant. Can't wait.
I'm sure you can.
Let's talk Man United, because actually was it? I'm on the slight downside. I'm on a 12-hour flight with the Stretford Paddock lads, which could be worse. I like Adam McCullough, which is sad. I don't really know too many of the other ones, like, so it'll be fine. And hopefully I won't be sat near them. But it is good that Man United are shite, because I'm more like, because like Adam's in a really down place about his football club. All the ones I do that last fan standing show with, but Lee Judge is in decent headspace because Arsenal are quite on a bit of an upturn generally in happiness, aren't they? But like Chelsea is screwed and Man United is screwed, so it's been good fun. Anyway, let's talk about how crap Man United are. Cristiano Ronaldo, Chris.
Yeah.
Second day running at time recording that he's not turned up for training. At this point, I think it's an authorised absence.
They've called it family reasons.
Yeah, and I don't want to laugh too hard in case it's something really bad and you come across looking really callous and crass or whatever, but it's not, regardless, and hopefully he laments this, you know, in that it's, because he'll know it's not a good look. It's either not a good look on purpose or he'll sat there be raging because it makes him look worse. But there's a chance that nobody wants to buy Cristiano Ronaldo and their greatest ever footballer, who's on 500 grand a week,
and has stated his intent to want to play at a higher level than his football club can offer him, is going to be stuck at that football club playing Europa League football and challenging for between fifth and eighth in the league next season.
For what he's done in his career, he deserves better than Manchester United right now.
Yeah, he does.
And he feels that way.
He probably does.
Certainly.
He's earned that.
I remember when Fernando Torres wanted to leave Liverpool, and it was because they basically said to him, it's going to take 2 or 3 years to fix this. And he was like, well, I'm in my peak years now.
Yeah.
Ronaldo's at the other end of the spectrum. He's like, well, I don't want 2 or 3 years because I want to win now. Like, obviously, he went to Man United thinking, I'm going to the second place team in England. We're signing Varane, we're signing Sancho, we're on the move.
And he'll be thinking, I'm the Champions League. I'm the I can piece. Score goals that, even if we're crap, I can score goals that could win us a Champions League.
And he scored really late winners in Europe to help them out in certain situations. They were just so crap that even he couldn't do it. And I think he's walked in there, and I know Ross said this line, like when Benitez got to Everton and realised it was, when you get in there, you realise how bad it was. And he's sussed it. He's gone, Erik ten Hag could be the next, I don't know, the greatest manager of all time. He's still going to need time to fix this. I'm like 37, 38. I haven't got time. Like, I'm not even playing in my competition. Like, the Champions League is his thing. Like, when you talk about Messi and Ronaldo, and you're always compare the two, the one that Ronaldo's got is the Champions League's. You know, he's got that. He's got the more success in that competition, Leo Messi, and he's not even playing in it. And when he went to Man United, when they were second in the league, and looking at who they'd signed and the squad, he's probably thought, I'm actually the missing piece. At least worst case is, I'll be playing European Champions League footy for the next couple of years. And it, without realising how much of an absolute disaster that place was.
I think he's looking at it as well from a footballing standpoint and going, I know what Ajax played like, and I know that 11 men have got to chase the ball around the pitch. So I don't think I'm going to get away with being the goal scorer and not having too much involvement in the rest of it, because Ten Hag won't stand for that. And that's a good thing from Ten Hag, to be honest with you. You know, I'm not being facetious or anything now. Like, Ronaldo is a goal scorer, and that is who he is at this stage of his career. And he needs to find a team that is going to allow him to just be a goal scorer.
Yeah.
United isn't going to be that. So is he going to sit on the bench for Europa League side? What does that do to brand CR7?
Yeah, and this is his issue, and that's why I think he's gone into, in wrestling parlance, he's gone into business for himself here, is he's effectively just reminded the world that he's bigger than Manchester United in what he's doing here. Because, and a part of me was like, well, maybe Ten Hag's had a little word with him and gone, I'll be honest, mate, I really need you, if you're going to stay, I need you to be this, can you be that? Be honest with me. And Ronaldo's gone, no, mate. And he's gone, okay, well, I'll tell you what, get yourself out. But Ronaldo's done it in the most Ronaldo way possible. He's protected brand Ronaldo by, it's not, I'm not good enough for Man United. Because you can't say that. You can't say, I'm not good enough to play it, because they're playing the Europa League. They're a Europa League team. But in doing that, he's just taken yet more tarnish off, or tarnished even further the reputation.
But the flip side is, like, they don't want to sell him, so it can't be that. Like, they're saying no, he's not for sale. If Ten Hag wants them gone, you would like to. I mean, I might be wrong because, again, shit show. But like, he would have communicated that a long time ago.
But what do they do? They say, yeah, he's defo for sale. Everyone knows he's for sale. What they say, yeah, he is. What happens? How does that benefit Manchester United?
That's true, but I think if they want to protect themselves, I suppose they could go, right, the manager's decided.
But is anyone smart enough at that football club to think of how Manchester United protect themselves?
You're just doing his transfer fee, Ian. Yeah. If you decide that we need rid of him.
You'd leak out, someone can have him for 80 million. You'd find ways to do it. There's like, Jude Bellingham isn't for sale, but, oh, by the way, if someone bids £100 million, he might be for sale. There's ways to doing it. I think that the pertinent question is, like, where he goes. Is that, like, Napoli wanted him, but, like, Is he going to take Napoli to the Champions League final? Maybe. Who knows? Like, but that they're in it. At least that's a start. Like, he's got more chance than he would have if he went to United, if he stays at United. But Chelsea were interested, apparently. There was talks about Chelsea.
That's the only one that seems to have any legs.
I think that would make sense. I think Thomas Tuchel wouldn't mind having a striker who just stands there a little bit, to be honest, and can run in behind a bit. He doesn't really want them to press all over the pitch. Kai Havertz doesn't really do that role. Lukaku didn't when he, so I think Chelsea would make sense.
But that also, the Lukaku thing's not quite. Example are you trying to make by
but
he bought reference
him.
To, yeah,
he
but,
bought him, so
did he?
Yeah, that's a good point again. Yeah, true. But like, that's the only one I can think of that would really make sense. They're not going to sell to Manchester City, and they won't buy him now anyway. They just got Haaland, and they did want him. It's hard to find somewhere, really. Paris have said they don't want him. Real Madrid makes sense, but then, like, why do they need him when they, you know, Karim Benzema is doing all kinds of them. They don't need him. So actually finding a place where he lands who are the profile of club he would want. He wants to go somewhere where he can win the Champions League.
And he wants £500,000 a week.
But, yeah.
So there's three clubs in the world and they're not interested. Well, he's at one. You've got Manchester City and you've got PSG.
Yeah, who can afford him? Where's he going to play? And are they willing? Can they win the European Cup? That's a very small club.
There's no one in the middle.
There's Real Madrid. Probably the only ones who that's it. Really. PSG don't want, apparently just aren't interested whatsoever.
I said this on the summer transfer show on Monday. PSG just needs to do football a favour and find a way to buy him.
To be fair, actually, you know what? Chelsea might be in that mix.
Yeah,
Chelsea might.
But we don't know anymore, do we? That's the thing about Chelsea.
It's a new Chelsea. It's a fair point. But yeah, there's not many of them.
As a stopgap 1 year thing, they probably could, because there's residual. Still, Chelsea still make the money that Chelsea make, and there probably is. I just don't even know how they're financed. You know,
their European Cup winners 2 years ago. They were quarter finalists, weren't they, recently? So they've got the money. We think. Who knows, really? But yeah,
they've got no centre-halves as well.
But then would United want to be selling him to Chelsea? That's a bad look for them. PR. I mean, again, PR-wise, they're a disaster.
But it's just that thing of Ronaldo. It was bad enough last season when you had Andros Townsend doing Ronaldo celebrations and taking the piss out of him, and he's slapping Evertonian kids' phones out their hands because they're getting filming him with his cut legs, and everyone's just, the cameras are constantly looking at him, going, ah, look, United are shit, let's see how Ronaldo reacted to it. He's going to have to live in that glare 10 times more now, because imagine he has to stay.
They'll literally have a camera on the bench.
If he's not playing the entire 90 minutes,
and they'll probably put out a Zidane style film of it.
I'd
love that.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Portrait of misery.
I was thinking, he's very divisive among the Man United fan base. From what I say, I don't really care too much, but like, yeah, bits and bobs. Like, some are going, well, without him, we'd have been relegated. And some are actually going, no, you wouldn't, because Marcus Rashford might not have fell off a cliff in terms of his form. Like, we might have got more out of Sancho.
Loads of the wonderful, improvable football arguments. Yeah.
And we don't know. Like, both are true, perhaps. Like, Ronaldo scored lots of goals for Man United. He scored double figures, 20-odd goals. Really good goal-scoring season. But, like, what did that take away from Man United? The team, we'll never really know. It's a fine battle. To sell your top striker, which is what he is. Is he the best player? Probably. And doing it, it's almost like, you know, it's like chopping the head off a rose because it grows again better. Like, they might have to do that. But I don't know where he goes.
That was a beautiful analogy.
Was it? Oh, thanks. But like,
I saw you as a gardener.
I'm not.
But you nailed it.
Yeah, thanks. But who's buying him? Well, that's again, a really hard. He must have. But then for him to do this, Paul, he must know someone wants him. You don't put it out in the public, I want to leave.
Is Ronaldo though?
He
believes that everyone wants him. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I would. Again, maybe I'm giving too much credit. But
sure, his agents will have gone. Yeah, but then again, the thing is, he's at that stage. He's at the stage where his agent's going, "Hey, Chrissy, baby, you're beautiful. Everybody will want you. You're Cristiano Ronaldo." And he'll go, "Yeah, yeah, of course I am.
Is his agent like a mafia boss?
Probably. Yeah,
yeah, legitimately.
So this is the point though. Why it ties into the Man United thing perfectly. I mean, look what they've done. Like, they've destroyed Marcus Rashford, completely destroyed him. I don't even want to get into the stuff that's going on with Greenwood at the moment. Obviously, that's just ongoing. That's another shitstorm that's bubbling away under Man United, which, you're right, is not Man United's fault in any way, but it's a thing that's there.
They give the goalie £380,000 a week.
He fell out with Cavani and let him go, who, like, at this point, and I know, and this is the problem, Cavani's boss, and I know they've obviously had issues around him, but there could be a point where they're like, they could have done with not burning that bridge, and I wonder whether they would have significantly burnt that bridge
if
they'd known Ronaldo was going to...
Yeah, I saw the comments.
And the biggest problem, as I see it, for Manchester United is that the manager doesn't trust the people who were lined up to sort the transfers out, because he's come in there... He's gotten rid of the lad who was supposed to be the consultant who was taking it over straight away.
And
he's gone to lads that have played for him.
Yep.
Because he's looking at it and there's absolutely no trust there.
This has got... It feels a bit Brendan Rodgers-y, doesn't it, in that regard, of like, and whether this is because it's ego and he wants the power and he doesn't want, and like Moyes had this, you walk into Manchester United and it probably can be a bit overawing, and the looming spectre of Alex Ferguson, they won't let him go. Some point, I said this before, someone needs to do to him what Liverpool did to Shankly and just say, stop coming to games, mate. Stop coming to games until we're good, because it's embarrassing. I mean, God, how much money did we make on that Alex Ferguson face at the Man United game? You know what I mean?
I was going to say, keep him there, please.
We should. But that's what I mean. I'm talking from the Man United perspective. And it adds more pressure than you could possibly imagine when you're walking into that job. So managers will double down on themselves because they'll gamble on themselves instead of trusting.
Well, if you're going to die by the sword, die by your own.
Exactly. And that's been the difference between what Jürgen did. Jürgen come in and went, right, cool, I'll put my trust into it. And he's grown the trust in the people around him. And it's got to be a holistic approach if you want to turn a giant club.
That's where I think Ten Hag might be doing the right thing, because if he doesn't trust them now, at least he can trust the players that he's targeting. But it's just that he can't get the players that he's targeting because the money's all over the show.
Also,
he's got lads there on £500,000 a week who he doesn't want to play in the side. Yeah. And it's a massive, massive fucking job.
But you created the problem with it when it goes wrong. A, you don't know if the players are good enough, because he's not experienced enough to know if those players are good enough to succeed in England. And this
he's
is where
good enough to, what he does know though is that they can succeed in the Champions League to a point, right? And he's now gone from a Champions League side to Europa League side. Now, albeit one with huge sway in world football, but that sway's waning.
Yeah.
And it has waned. Like the fact that Frenkie de Jong at the moment, where is he? It looks like it's still up in the air. He's not getting his number one target. As a Manchester United fan,
gripping onto the Nou Camp walls.
You are absolutely fuming. Barcelona are miles away from Real Madrid, and yet he's deciding to stay there. And because he realised that Manchester United are even further away from challenging for the Premier League.
I think it's what's telling is that he's been allowed to do this. Like, that shows you, going back to earlier, what's the plan? You said before, what's the plan? Because if the plan is, let a manager come in and he gets to everyone's. And again, I can't remember, I apologise, on Twitter, someone like, the fact that he's doing this shows like Man United shit. And a lot of fans are like, well, we have to back the manager. You have to back the manager. Well, actually, you don't. Really, you should back the club and the system in place. Jürgen didn't get everyone Jürgen wanted. If Jürgen got everyone Jürgen wanted, we wouldn't have Mohamed Salah. We might have Goethe. You know, we might have, who's the other lad that went? Brand. The lad who went to PSG. I forgot his name.
Yeah,
but you're great. German. But you know, like, these, we'd have had them. Not
really annoying, because I know it's in the tip of my tongue, can't
Draxler. We've had them. So you don't always get your ones. You actually know this, because for Liverpool, the football club, you should be able to take your manager out and your transfers.
And
this
is the point I'm making on that, and that's why it's Rodgers-y, is that he's never managed in the Premier League, so he doesn't know how good a player has to be truly to play in the Premier League. And Rodgers done a season, but he was still going at Swansea levels, and he thought he could make that step up.
Hodgson did the same, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, and because it's all the same to me. I know what good looks like in my head, but that might not be of the standard. But it leads into your point, which I think the point was made on Twitter, is if it goes wrong for a start, you've got a bunch of players that have been bought specifically by a manager for that manager, and they're going to be left with another manager coming in. And then what does he do? You've got three players or four players who are specifically Ten Hag's
That's why Everton went wrong. Everton at the moment. Everton
United have done this three times now, by the way. Yes. Like, you know what I mean? This is not new.
It's why Frank Lampard walks in and he's got a squad that is Marco Silva's, Carlo Ancelotti's,
Sam Allardyce's.
Like, Cenk Tosun was allowed to sign. Like, madness. Like, and he walked in and was like, what is this? And they're kind of doing the same again. They're giving him as players. There's no structure in place. Pep Guardiola could leave Manchester City and Manchester City would sign the same type of players. Whether they could get them is a different matter, because he's a big draw. I think if Jürgen left, Liverpool would still have the structure in place where they go for a certain type of players. The only ones who've had any relative success without doing it is kind of Chelsea, who've just threw money at him and backed it. It is a shambles.
Chelsea have done smartly always is just bought boss players.
Yeah.
And really, you know, not and players you can do a bit. I've got a bit of these lads,
you figure them out. And if you can't figure them out, we'll just
Chelsea
you.
Know what a player looks like who's good enough to play in the Premier League.
And if it doesn't work, you'll just have to manage it.
And to be fair, they've had Gravenskaya or whatever her name it was.
And Petr Cech was involved a little bit as well, wasn't he? So yeah, you're right. But their situation's different. They buy the players and say to the manager, here's all these boss lads, make them win. And if you can't make them win, we'll sack you. And we'll get someone else. Man United are going to do it around. They're going to the manager. right, Mr. Ten Hag, you're the new Lord and Saviour, because we had this with Alex Ferguson and we know if we back the manager 100% he wins. Who do you want? He's gone, okay, Frankie de Jong, Anthony, just lads you know. Okay. Manage. Okay, sounds, gone by them. If he's a crap manager, if he's crap, and there's no fail-safe that he's not, they've gone about it the wrong way, because you're right. He goes and then you're left, and then...
This is where I disagree on that. I think they wanted to do it this time. They bought, like, had Ralph Rangnick's lined up to do that, and they've not got the testicular fortitude to stand up for themselves.
Exactly that. They've won.
That's the problem.
I
agree with you, but my point is they thought, we've put it in place, you've got to trust, and the manager's come in and gone, that's fucking ridiculous. Back me instead. And they've gone, okay.
Because the manager's got too much power. Rodgers got rid of everything.
And that's what I'm saying. It feels like they're now in the their Rodgers era. Like, they've gone through their, Ollie was their Evans era or whatever. They could probably do with a Julio or whatever. They could do with, but the problem is I don't think they realise how far they've fallen. It was our joke about, like, you're not seeing how fat you're getting when you look at yourself in the mirror every day. It's that thing of, I don't think they recognise it internally. We're shit here. We're really shit. They always believe that they're one signing away from, we'll be right
back to recognising this, aren't we? Yeah. We understand this. We've been there. We've lived through all of that.
Your conversation with the house and that a while ago, wasn't it? When he's like, you're not seeing it. We've seen it. And they don't get it. And it's hard to admit your faults and sometimes start again.
Joe, sorry, I told you not to. Have we still got the clip? Yeah. Go on, play it for us.
Otherwise, but it's how you've reacted to losing Ferguson, which I almost feel sorry for you, because you can't see it yet. And I've been through it and I've lived through it. You know, we won the FA Cup in, I think it was 1992, against Sunderland. And we thought winning a couple of trophies here there through the 90s was going to be enough to see us get back to league titles. That's what Manchester United aren't going to do under Mourinho. And you don't see it coming. And that's almost why I feel sorry for Man United fans right now.
United have had our dip. We had Moyes. We managed to somehow
survive.
You
won a league title since Ferguson?
Have you won a league title in colour?
No. No, not in the Premier League, but right. That's why I'm in a good position to be able to sit here and tell you can't see it coming, because you think a League Cup and a Europa League is enough to get you back to winning league titles. And that isn't, because Jose Mourinho will never win a league title with Manchester United.
Just as fresh and relevant today as it was then. Of course, Liverpool have won a title since then, but that's the point, isn't it? Is that, Chris, and you're right there, it's that recognition. I think the most insightful of their fans recognise it, but the problem is that there's so many Man United fans, it's impossible to hear the sensible voices in amongst them, and there's too many people at that football club and close to that football club whose voices get listened to who don't recognise it. It's the fact that when you've got, like, Rio Ferdinand was touting himself for the director of football job, and like Darren Fletcher gets jobs, it's a bunch of lads who are like, they should be pundits. And they should be there going, in my day this, but they're not. They're going, in my day this, but they're actually having sway at the footy club. It's hilarious.
Yeah, what they need is a director of football, a proper one. Not like lads who can pretend to be a director of football, you know what I mean? If I was them, I'd want Paul Scholes involved somewhere, because he can see it.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean he's the director of football. That means he's a fucking sounding board for the truth.
He's crap.
Yeah, that's what you want. Because he can see it all. He's the only one. And he goes viral because it's the truth. Yeah. Because everyone, he goes viral because everyone outside of Manchester United fans recognise it as the truth.
Yeah.
And that's the key. He'd be involved. He'd be my first port of call. Come and tell us who's shit. And unfortunately,
all of them.
There wouldn't be many left.
They need a lack of egos. They need two. And that's what Liverpool went right. Because you've got Michael Edwards there, who's sat there being cold and analytic, and he's got his data department behind him going, like, this is my belief on this. And you've got Jurgen Klopp, who's so confident in himself and that he can afford to let go and allow to place trust and actually put his own life in the hands of the people around them. Because, you know, I mean, over dramatic, but you take the point, is that a manager, the manager position is so fragile that that's why you do double down on yourself and why you hunker down and you make all the decisions, because you can lose your job when some lad decides not to kick a ball properly for you. So you want to have as much control as possible. Jürgen doesn't. Jürgen goes, cool. I've been given the trust of saying, I've got this two-year contract and a three-year contract, and then we're going to grow it incrementally. Man United try to jump to the
try and fix it every single time. And that's because
they're so impatient, and their fans, and again, and their fans get lost in there because they're getting their heads turned by
what holds them back? The money they've got. Yeah. It actually holds them back in this instance. If they had to go and work towards it, they would be in a much better position because they'd have to get the other stuff right.
Yeah. Man United aren't allowed to finish fourth and then finish third and then win a couple of cups and then maybe finish second and then like they have to win now. There's no 5-year plan at Man United. It's a now you win now and that's
it's
and
a really a worrying start for Ten Hag for me for them. If you're a Manchester United fan, I'm looking at that going, he's come in and he's basically ripped everything up already. Is he going to be given the time? Because that's the when you come in and it's all on you, it's very easy to sack a manager. When you are working within a restraint or with the club, you get more time.
Michel Arteta is the example. Arsenal, Man United will sack Michel Arteta. Because he'd have been on him and he'd have sacked him. Arsenal knew that he was limited what he could do, but that was a grand plan. And I think we'd all agree we're starting to see the springs of success at Arsenal are growing. Yeah. Man United, it's on fire. Someone salted it, set it on fire, dug it up, shit on it. It's a disaster.
Both of those clubs are in the same problem, though, is that neither of them will have the patience to see it through.
But I think Arsenal have. I mean,
their fans will. You know, because the problem is that Spurs might just get it right better.
Yeah.
And a lot of this will depend on what happens
at
right, Chelsea.
I keep saying when I'm talking about Arsenal and Tottenham for this summer, I'm seeing joined up writing, I'm seeing, you know, beautiful, cursive sort of calligraphy. United is a fucking kidnapper's letter. You know what I mean? It's a fucking joke.
It's written in the victim's blood or something.
It's just fucking ridiculous. Like, everyone's got a fucking little piece of just bullshit.
Yeah. The Manchester even news on this say Man United are aiming to complete 5 signings by the end of their pre-season tour.
I'm still aiming to bag Mila Kunis, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Yeah. But they will buy players. They will eventually. They'll get it done. But where they keep forgetting this, like, they're back at pre-season training. It started.
He's got a minute, 9 o'clock, Paul. He's whipping them into shape. Have you seen all that?
Oh, she
did. The lads are in at 9. They're wearing at 9:30. What a guy Ten Hag is. You're having a laugh, lad.
Look at this coaching masterpiece, and he's asking them to pass the ball.
And they were going. I saw one where he went. He got in at like 8 o'clock in the morning before the lads got in at 9 the first day, and he got in at 8:40 the second day. I was like, wow, that's a slippery slope.
Quarter to the next day. He was a little late because traffic was bad the day after that.
He's working from home.
He forgot to plug the charger right into his phone, so his alarm didn't go off the day after that. So it was after 12 the next day.
Tuesday, but he zoomed. He's in Zoom.
They're absolutely fucked. And they're not recovering anytime soon from it. They've got to fight Europa League. And again, the league starts in a month.
Pretty much.
And they've not signed anyone yet, and they will have a month's plenty of time to sign the players that you need to sign.
But they're not learning the new system now.
They don't know how to play. They don't know what the manager wants. We're signing players under Jürgen Klopp and letting them train for half a season before they get properly integrated.
The problem they've got, they want to sign 5 people. They're spending that much money on Ronaldo and that the fucking director of football's on the mega bus going to visit the people, you know what I mean? They've got no money left to do anything else. He's paid a quid to get over to Spain or whatever.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
How far are they from challenging for major honours?
They are
5 years.
No, they are Manchester City and Liverpool away from challenging for major honours. They are Pep Guardiola and Jürgen Klopp away from challenging for major honours.
I said 5 years.
They can't win a league title until those two leave their football clubs.
Why I said 5, because I think one of Jürgen or Pep, or maybe both, will be gone in 5.
They are a bare minimum of 3 seasons, and that's like hyper optimistic in my eyes. You know, you're talking 6 transfer windows, and they've got to be spot on with them.
They're at the point where Jürgen came in, and bear in mind the league wasn't as good. There was no Manchester City really. There was Manchester City, but they weren't this Manchester City. You know, we had to try and overtake. That was our rival, but they weren't this good. They weren't the Pep.
I would say 10 years behind in terms of transfer strategy.
Mm-hmm.
They are, I don't know how many years behind in state of stadium and training ground. I'm not able to thingy.
The ground is shit
all. But all I do know is that Carrington is not Kirby or Manchester City's complex.
Mm-hmm. And the grounds
are... They are a world-class manager away. They are, you know, as I mentioned, 10 years behind on transfer strategy, and their team looks to be minimum 5 years behind. Yep. So between 5 and 10 years away from winning a league title.
How long have they... When did they last win the league? And so on?
12, I think.
It's been 12 years?
No, 2012, I think.
10 years?
I think.
Can't tell you.
So, okay, I can Google it. But could they break the 30 years that we had to go through? Do you think they would?
I mean, look, it will... Just because of their financial clout, it was the point that, like, it's being regurgitated. Gary Neville was the show that you went to watch where he said, like, United
2012-13.
Yeah, before United win the title again before Liverpool, and he was just wrong in everything he said ultimately. But his point was right, is that just because of the size of them, it will once somebody finally clicks on and puts the right people in the business, they'll have a better... it'll turn around more quickly than it did at Liverpool.
I don't think they can win the league title under the Glazers. This now.
Oh yeah, I forgot all about ownership.
I don't think they can win the league title under the Glazers.
I mean, we're at a point where Arsenal are pretty much halfway to 30 years. They might actually be 15, 16 years. Arsenal, Paul. You know, that has gone very, very quickly since Arsenal last won a league title. Chelsea will probably stay there or thereabouts. Liverpool right now have put the foundations in place for a period of time, whether the manager goes or not. Man City,
Arsenal, 2004.
Foundation. It was the Invincibles.
Yeah, 18.
The last time they won the league.
18. Coming up to 19. If they don't win it this year, they'll be 19 years. I don't think they're going to win the league this year.
And also, you got to have Chelsea fucked as well, by the way. They're in the
but moment. I still think I just.
I think they're closer.
I think Chelsea are okay with chaos. They're a club who's all right with it. They can. They can win the spikes.
Organised chaos.
I just think we don't know what Chelsea are anymore. They're like...
That's why I'm not ruling them out. I would be shocked if Chelsea just went. They're like Frankenstein.
They've got a good manager and they've got a good team. If they survive this season, they might be able to build on it. But if for any reason the wheels come off at some point, we don't know how their owners are going to behave. And they've got not everyone from Tuchel up is gone.
But their fans
and
changed.
So the fucking owner is acting as director of football. Fuck's sake.
I understand, but like, I think that mental club, if any club, again, they like the chaos, and the fans are used to it.
I'll tell you what, for the next couple of weeks, we'll do Chelsea next week as the focus on, because I think they're a really interesting one, because they are the biggest unknown of the top teams in the league. Because everything we know about them and we've understood about them may or may not apply anymore.
Should we do Chelsea next week?
Yeah,
and then maybe City.
So we wanted to. I asked people to put suggestions for what could possibly be causing Chris to make the face that he's making on the thumbnail.
Can you do the face?
Bit smilier.
It is. Joel added it.
Kieran Orr says, I don't get this one, but someone can explain it to me. When the missus tells you it's your lucky night and she opens the door to luxury girl.
That's the face.
It's your lucky night and she opens the door. What's happening here?
Luxury girl is getting a threesome with me and my wife.
Luxury girl's a porn star, apparently.
But she's telling you it's your lucky night.
Yeah,
and then she opens the door.
Yeah,
so your missus goes, you're looking nice, and invites the third lady.
You're outside the house and she's in the house already.
She opens the bedroom door and invites the third lady in.
This is probably the face that I would do. I might need to stand up for this, so I'll try and get in. It's probably the face.
And I'm done. See you in a way, out, love.
Grab us a towel on your way past, yeah.
So,
amazing.
Did you see any more in the comments?
Oh, I didn't look.
You said before you were...
No, whatever. I said to you, would you like to look? And you said, I'll do it. And you said,
no, I said I hadn't looked and you were looking.
Oh, I didn't look. So
you'll have to do it next week, sorry.
Oh, no.
Right, so we're going to wrap up. We have got the draft to come. So as mentioned, Steve versus Chris, head-to-head draft pick, alternating pick for Liverpool players signed from other Premier League clubs. It's going to be brutal. Do join us over on Redman Plus for that.
It's one all between me and Chris.
Yeah.
In drafts.
Ooh.
Yeah. I won the first one, you won the last one.
basically, podcast extra as well, by the way. We won't be doing that this week, but last week's one was an absolute gem. If you want to know this, if you want to hear us talk about stuff that we couldn't possibly say in public, then go and check out podcast extra. Last week was
Chris is why you got sacked. Story might be the best thing that's ever been spoken.
I went to watch World in One City last week with, and Steve Plunkett came down with us, and he was like, oh, Jay Pearson's been telling me this story, it was amazing, I can't wait to listen to it. I was like, I can tell you it, you know, if you want. And then, I'm not just here having a conversation with you. Hello, Steve. And then I started and I thought, oh, fuck it, just listen to the podcast, mate.
The best version. So the best version of our best stories all exist on Podcast Extra. Yeah, do go over and check out Redman Plus. We're very, very proud of what we're doing over there. Again, extra content in video and in podcast form. So if you want more of us on the go, you can get it. If you want to be able to sit down and watch more of these type of shows, we've got it covered, but we've also got documentaries, features and interviews, and hopefully, we've been going on the tour next week. Fingers crossed I get to sort a couple of extra wonderful bits out. We've got a good track record. I'm not going to promise anything. I'm hoping, hopefully, that's how I'll under-promise and hopefully over-deliver, but we'll see. Join Redman Plus, it's boss. Right, sound. Gentlemen, thank you. Pleasure. Thank you so much for joining in at home. You guys are awesome as well. And the podcast will return next week. Ta-da.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.